women can and will make the right decision for themselves when they have all of those facts. And so it is definitely paternalistic to say, you know, you should just sit back and not try to tell women about these things because it will sway them to do one thing over another. Women are, you know, the decision makers on so many things in our society, and they should be the decision makers on what happens with their body.
Diversity of ideas is harder than it looks. Welcome to Innovation for All, conversations on the social impact of innovation with your host, Shayna Ahlquist.
Welcome to the Innovation for All podcast, where it's my job to speak with innovators and technologists on issues of culture, social systems, and diversity. I'm your host, Shayna Ahlquist. In today's episode, I spoke with Anne Hogarty. Anne's the CEO of Extend Fertility, a company that helps women preserve their fertility through egg freezing. Prior to her work in the fertility space, she worked at BuzzFeed during its period of hypergrowth from a $20 million company to a $250 million digital leader. There, she served in progressively more senior finance, strategy, and general management roles. Anne oversaw the doubling of BuzzFeed's international revenue within 2 years. Anne feels strongly that women deserve every chance to build a family on a timeline that works for them. At Extend Fertility, she's honored to be leading a company devoted to that mission. She's a born and raised New Yorker, and resides in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood with her husband and two young children. One of my goals for Innovation for All is to highlight businesses that are serving populations that have been traditionally overlooked. And I think Extend Fertility fits into that space. So Extend Fertility is one of several new services that is designed to serve women who want to freeze their eggs when they're a little bit younger. While I think that question is very interesting, and while their goal makes a lot of sense on the surface, I like to joke that you can't touch women's issues with a 10-foot pole without everybody getting mad. So Extend Fertility has certainly seen their share of controversy. I think we run into questions like, is telling young women that they need to think about their fertility, is that fear-mongering? I mean, should we be comfortable having those conversations? Are we doing a service to them, or are we just trying to scare them? I think Extend Fertility and some of their competitors have also run into challenges where, because they're trying to lower the cost of these fertility services to a much lower price point, as we discuss in the episode, people start worrying about, do we want our medical care really to cost a lot less? Is that going to compromise our care? And lastly, we discuss Extend Fertility had kind of a PR snafu when they began advertising their services on Instagram. And although they targeted very broadly just women of a certain age group, the backlash they received was sort of fierce, both from people who were concerned about fertility and were offended that maybe the targeting was too precise, but also from people who aren't even remotely interested in having children and felt like they were being sort of stereotyped. So I wonder, and I pose this question to Anne, is there just some incompatibility between the seriousness of fertility issues and the sort of lightheartedness of a platform like Instagram? I found Anne to be very thoughtful and forthcoming, and I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope you do too. And lastly, a quick request. Do you know someone who's interested in fertility or maybe has even considered egg freezing? I hope you share this episode with them. Pause this episode right now, assuming that it's safe to do so, and text them a link to today's episode. And with that, please enjoy my conversation with Anne Hogarty. Anne Hogarty, welcome to Innovation for All.
Thank you so much for having me.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on this show is I'm always interested when new businesses are created that serve the needs of a group that's been traditionally overlooked. So Extend Fertility is, I mean, obviously I'll give you a chance to give your perhaps more well put version of what it is, but it's, you know, a more affordable fertility service for women that is a service that has traditionally been a little bit more expensive, maybe been out of reach to a lot of people, that you guys are trying to make a little bit more affordable. Can you tell me a little bit about Extend Fertility, just sort of what you do at a very basic level?
Sure. You're right with that description. But the thing that I think stands out most about Extend is that we were really the first fertility company to launch with a focus on proactive fertility preservation versus launching to help people struggling with infertility. And that you know, stemmed from the key insight of our co-founder, who's a doctor, Dr. Joshua Klein, who's a reproductive endocrinologist and had been practicing at one of the largest and most respected practices in the US prior to founding Extend. And that insight of his was really that it is the age of the eggs that will determine most likely whether a woman or a couple is likely to be successful with IVF. That's in vitro fertilization for anyone that doesn't know it, which is the act of combining an egg and a sperm in a dish to create an embryo and then help people have a child if they're unable to naturally. And the true thing is that he was able to tell from the age of a woman, either from looking at her chart or when she walked into his office, how likely she was going to be successful with the fertility treatments that they provided. And so he realized that why aren't more people talking about the importance of preserving their younger eggs when they have that chance with this new technology that had come about really over the past 20 years, but then was okayed to be used more broadly in 2013, called vitrification or flash freezing of eggs.
Can you walk me through briefly what the process of egg freezing looks like for those of us who don't know?
Of course. So the process of egg freezing starts with a patient coming in and basically learning more about her fertility health, which is done through a blood test to take key hormone levels, particularly the anti-Müllerian hormone, which is an indicator of ovarian reserve. The other test that we do up front is a vaginal ultrasound to basically check everything out and look at a woman's follicles to see if, you know, that tells a very different story from those hormone levels. Following that, you meet with one of our doctors for 45 minutes to an hour and discuss both your medical history, the results of that fertility testing, and so therefore what you might be able to expect from egg freezing. And that's also when the doctor takes you through the process. From there, if you're interested and if you're a good candidate for egg freezing, you can decide to move forward. We run a class where basically we teach everyone how to inject the hormone medication that you need to stimulate the growth of your follicles and the maturation of your eggs. And the idea behind that is by doing that, you can get more eggs produced that can then be aspirated during the retrieval process and frozen for later. So our goal is to try to make this as effective and successful for you as possible without, of course, it being dangerous. And so you basically take those hormone medications yourself, giving yourself those with shots over 8 to 12 days. You come into our office every few days for monitoring, which includes, again, blood tests and a vaginal ultrasound to check on how your follicles are developing. And then at the end, you take a trigger shot, which basically triggers your follicles to be ready for the doctor to do the retrieval procedure, which happens in our operating room, where basically they insert a needle through the vaginal wall and aspirate out the follicular fluid, which contains both immature and mature eggs. Those then go directly into our state-of-the-art lab, which is next door, and that's when our embryologists look at them, identify the mature eggs, and freeze those, because those are the ones that are most likely and hopefully could be used to make embryos and babies later.
Yowza. So that is not a quick and easy process. That sounds like the kind of thing that people would be making careful decisions about and not making a decision about lightly.
Exactly. People should make a careful decision about it. And it's a real medical procedure. And that's why from the beginning, Extend has been so focused on our clinical excellence. I think that right now, in terms of the popularity of egg freezing and awareness around it, there's definitely some fertility marketers who are out there talking a lot about the benefits of it, about, you know, the fact that fertility declines with age, and not so much talking about what is the process really, what are the facts around that, and what are the facts that you can expect based on, you know, the various biological indicators that you have. And that's why Extend has really prioritized the idea of educating people about that fertility and offering so much free counseling ahead of having people go into their cycle.
Okay, so this new technology, is that part of what makes this a more feasible option right now?
Exactly. So previously, in order to freeze a woman's eggs, people used the slow freezing method, which involved, freezing things just as you might, in a freezer. And that involved ice crystals forming within the eggs, which are basically one cell and are the largest cell in a woman's body. And when you went to thaw those ice crystals, as the egg thawed, would expand and sometimes break or damage the egg. And so those had very low success rates in terms of the survival of those eggs from the thaw. And so that's why egg freezing was really not a thing until in 2013, the American Society of Reproductive Medicine said vitrification, which is a technique that had been around for 20 years and had been used for women who were going to be undergoing, treatment for cancer, which would leave them infertile. They were using that already to freeze their eggs. And basically ASRM, this governing body, said, okay, there's enough data to show that vitrification is very effective at egg freezing, that women who want to use it electively, who aren't sick, can, in order to preserve their fertility. And so that was a huge shift in the industry that basically allowed Extend and Dr. Klein to come in and say, wow, this could be a real breakthrough for many women who aren't ready or can't have a family in their prime reproductive years to still enable them to be a mother. And so that was an industry shift combined with what Dr. Klein saw of his patient base and why this could be so crucial for helping women have families when they're ready.
That's awesome. And I think one of the things that I find interesting about that story and how this technology became sort of approved to be used more widely is I always think it's interesting that sometimes when we solve problems for sort of edge case scenarios, so in this case, women with cancer, we're actually finding solutions that can be applied more broadly. And that's one of the reasons that I, in general, support looking for solutions for sort of diverse populations is you never know where you're going to find a great solution that can be applied to other groups as well.
I completely agree. And I think the hard part, and maybe it's also a good thing, is that it often takes a good amount of time for that technology to work its way from being used for those edge cases to being used for more mainstream things. Because vitrification had been around for maybe 20 years before it was really okayed for use for egg cryopreservation for women doing it electively. And so I think, I wish it could have been used to help women previously who are instead using the slow freezing method. But obviously, I'm so thankful it's out there and now we can help more women with it.
Well, and what was the holdup? Because I think, and we'll talk a little bit about, some of the paternalistic assumptions I think people might make around some of these questions. But sometimes it seems like we are a little bit more cautious with maybe specifically medical treatments, but things for women in general that might potentially introduce risk. And I'm wondering if whether your read on that 20-year period, if you find that to be consistent with that, or whether there were other sort of concerns that you think might have been more legitimate.
I think there might be something to that. I definitely think there is a lot of paternalism around using science and technology to help women with their bodies or basically female health. I remember when I first got into this industry, I told a friend of mine that, and he said, how sci-fi in thinking about using frozen eggs or frozen donor eggs to help women get pregnant later. And to me, it's actually not sci-fi. It's not science fiction. It's just a use of our medical technology and breakthroughs that doctors and scientists have been working on over the past several decades to help women live their lives in a better way. And so I think there's a little of that. And then, there's a lot of caution. I think part of that can be rooted in, the fertility industry has been around for four decades. Louise Brown was the first baby born from IVF in 1978. And so the focus of the industry was very much on how do you help couples who have discovered they're infertile have a baby? It was not on how do we, use the technology that we have to help women proactively preserve their fertility and delay something that maybe they could be doing. Maybe they could get pregnant when they're 30 or 25, but they choose to do it later. And so there's been a very gradual, reorientation of the industry, which is still happening around this idea of proactive fertility preservation versus reactive infertility.
Well, and it's interesting. I think a few years ago I heard, and I don't even know whether this is true or whether it was, just an online controversy, but that some of the Silicon Valley tech companies were going to start offering egg freezing as an option for their parts of their female workforce. And that was offered as a benefit to women under the assumption that women sometimes struggle with this idea of work-life balance and should I focus on my career or should I have a family? And it was offered as an option. And there was a lot of pushback. There was this pushback that shouldn't we be changing the system more broadly? Shouldn't we make it such that women can both work and have a family? Isn't this just sort of a band-aid? Do you find that to be a valid concern or is that sort of irrelevant for your customers?
I definitely do not agree that egg freezing is a band-aid for, you know, societal problems that are making it harder for women to have babies. I think the reason I don't agree is that I see, you know, the women that come in to extend fertility and the reasons that they're here to freeze their eggs, and it really doesn't fall into any one bucket. You know, there are women who don't have the right partner. They haven't met the person that they know they want to spend their life with and raise a family with. And that's a huge decision. And, you know, no matter whether you're working hard or not working hard, sometimes that just comes together earlier rather than later. I really believe in Sheryl Sandberg's, you know, quote that who you marry is the most important decision you'll make in your life. And so I think if egg freezing can help take the pressure off of finding that perfect partner and locking them in during your prime, you know, reproductive years, that's a huge pressure to lift off of women, kind of unrelated to their work. I also do see women who want to focus on their careers, and that's really their choice. I don't think by offering it as a benefit, you know, you're encouraging women to not have a family earlier. You know, most of those companies also offer amazing leave policies that are better than the average in the country. So I don't have that read on why they launched that as a benefit. And I think that as egg freezing and infertility benefits grow in popularity with companies, you know, you're going to see people have a much easier time planning families whenever they're ready.
Well, and this is sort of a transitional question and it's kind of a basic one, but why aren't infertility treatments covered by like health insurance? Why is that considered, you know, extremely separate from other kinds of health? Is it that it's optional and not required, if that makes sense? Or I'm not sure if you have a read on that.
Yeah, it's really up to companies right now as to whether there are a few states in which infertility coverage is mandated, but in most states it's not. And then it's up to the employer as to whether they want to include any benefit for that in insurance. And I think there is still a view that having a family is an elective thing. And so not everyone is entitled to access the latest technology in order to make that happen. I think that's wrong. I think, you know, you are seeing many societal trends that are shifting and pushing people to have families later in life. And that's not a bad thing necessarily. You know, I think it's wonderful that millennials nowadays, one of the hallmarks of that generation is they're less interested in acquiring things and more interested in having experiences. And so if you want to have a lot of different experiences, you know, try different jobs, travel the world, wait and meet the right person, then that can push family building to a later time. And so I think that's not a deficit for our country. I think that's actually potentially a very good thing. But then you need to be prepared to offer them the tools to help them build a family, you know, when they are ready.
No, and getting back to what you said earlier about essentially, this doesn't necessarily need to undermine our other efforts to have more work-life balance or give women more choices. It's interesting that this is just an additional choice, really, and that having one more choice can't really be all that bad, no?
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is a problem that's really born out of opportunities women have gained over the last 100 years, right? Now we're encouraged to get an education, to build a career that we really love, to find the right partner, not just any partner. And so I think those are fantastic things that have also pushed family building later into women's 30s as opposed to in their 20s or even teens. And that's all amazing for women. And, you know, as a byproduct of that, probably amazing for their children and their marriages. And so I agree that this is really just another choice to help make their life even better to live and give them more options. I think it's similar, really, you know, you could compare egg freezing and the growth of egg freezing to the advent of, you know, contraception and the pill. You know, there was a lot of pushback on that at the time. And it was really allowing women to, again, control, you know, reproduction when they wanted to have children versus not. And now egg freezing is something that's again allowing them to say, to plan, yes, I do want to have children, but just not right now. And so it's another option that I think enhances their lives and honestly, the lives of their partners. I hear from, you know, many of my girlfriends who have frozen their eggs and are still dating, that it can be a major relief to men when they find out that a woman has frozen their eggs. So that takes the pressure off of both people to really decide, is this the person for me? And allows them not to rush into anything that might not be right.
Well, I thought it was really interesting what you said earlier, that it doesn't seem like the main reason people are coming in is to sort of prioritize their work over family. It's that they are looking for the right partner. And Marcia Inhorn at Yale has also found that that's the main reason single people consider egg freezing, is that sort of lack of marriage material partner. I found that very surprising.
It doesn't surprise me, actually. You know, the reason that I got very interested in fertility and in egg freezing particularly is that I did happen to meet my husband, you know, in my mid-20s. We happened to get married, you know, when I was 30, and then have my first child when I was 33 and my second when I was 35. And, you know, so it all fell into place for me to be able to have children in my prime reproductive years. But I saw that for many of my closest girlfriends, it didn't fall into place in that time period. But now that I'm 37, many of them are similarly in their late 30s, and maybe they're meeting their right partner now, or maybe they will in a few years. And I thought, what a shame it would be if just because of a span of 10 years in a life where we now live to be 80, 90, 100 years old, that could be the difference between getting to ever be a mother or not. And so that's why I became so passionate about egg freezing and excited to help, you know, more women learn about it. Because I don't think that, you know, fluke of when you meet your partner or when you're ready should determine whether you get to experience that at all in life.
Have you ever been in a meeting where your team disagreed about the best course of action? Maybe you didn't know which message best resonates with your audience, or exactly who your customers are, or maybe which features they want you to build. Customer research from an impartial third party can offer the clarity you need. That's why PhD Insights offers Customer Research Delivered. Customer Research Delivered uses a 5-step process to apply customer research to answer your pressing business problem. Within 4 weeks, they'll design, host, deploy, and analyze a quantitative study so you can make better decisions to keep your business growing. Learn more about Customer Research Delivered by visiting phd-insights.com. That's phd-insights.com. Well, something else Extend Fertility and some of your competitors are also trying to do is really democratize access to this option. Can you talk a little bit about sort of the traditional cost of egg freezing versus the cost at Extend Fertility?
Sure. So traditionally in the fertility industry, IVF, in vitro fertilization, and egg freezing can run in the teens up to $20,000 or beyond. And in part, that's a function of an industry that is very tightly controlled by a certain number of reproductive endocrinologists. There are over 30,000 OBGYNs in the US. There are only around 1,700 reproductive endocrinologists in the country. And so they're actually able to charge very high prices for the services that they offer. If you look at one of the hospitals in New York City that reports its financials publicly, and you look at the highest compensated people within that health system, three of them are reproductive endocrinologists. And so there's significant margin baked into these services. And so, you know, one of the goals of Extend, which tied into the fact it wanted to market itself to younger women who are doing this electively, who don't have any coverage, and really want to do something proactive as opposed to reactive. And part of that is making it more accessible. And so, you know, the national average for egg freezing is, price-wise, is $11,000. Extend Fertility offers a first cycle for $6,500. And in general, we're also very committed to transparency around our prices. So that $6,500 price includes everything you need, from the doctor's appointment at the beginning to assess your fertility, to the monitoring appointments, to chart the development of your follicles, to the retrieval and the anesthesia required for that. other places, sometimes you may be quoted a cycle price and then find out later on top of that, there's a charge for every monitoring visit you come for. On top of that, there's a charge for the anesthesia that is really required for your procedure. And so we're very much into not hiding all of those extras. And again, I think millennials and people in general nowadays demand transparency, and that engenders trust. And so that's what we try to do at Extend.
Man, the rates that the reproductive endocrinologists are charging really surprises me, because I think one of the criticisms of the American healthcare system broadly is because we have insurance, many among those who have insurance, which is many more now than it used to be, we don't always see the true costs of things, right? It's sort of hidden away. Your insurance deals with it and you pay your copay or your deductible. But in this case, this is a cost that people are dealing with directly. So I'm sort of surprised that this is a place where the prices would be especially high. You'd think that because the consumers are seeing those costs, and in many cases more directly, that would be pressure to drive the prices down. But I guess that's not the case.
Yeah, I think that the high prices are really a function of three things. One is, again, the supply-demand imbalance, where the supply of people who are trained in reproductive endocrinology, and also the supply of embryologists who are the ones working in the lab to do, you know, the embryology of freezing eggs or combining eggs and sperm. You know, there aren't that many of those. And so there is that kind of hold on the market. I think the other thing is that historically, the customer that fertility catered to was a couple that was desperate to have a baby. And so it became a question of what are they willing to pay to have that baby? And so that's another reason people, I think, were willing to pay higher prices. Now we've introduced this new demographic of people who want to leverage the technology proactively. And so they're slightly more price sensitive. And so I think overall that's going to bring down prices over time. The final thing is just that there is a lot of complexity in fertility treatment. There's, you know, the doctor, the reproductive endocrinologist, trying to figure out what is the right medication protocol for a woman, what's going to help stimulate her ovaries enough, but not too much, and give her the best results. And then there's also the lab behind the scenes. Extend Fertility, since its beginning, really prioritized clinical excellence. And so we built our own lab from the ground up in 2016 with the most advanced technology, you know, mini incubators, a really cool compact design that can maximize success rates. And that cost a lot of money. And the people who work there are highly trained. So I think it's that combination of things that basically leads for prices to remain somewhat high still even today.
No, and I'm interested to see, as you said, whether the competition in the marketplace from companies like yours will help maybe drive those prices down. So I guess also as an aside, all the medical students listening, you should please become a reproductive endocrinologist or an embryologist if you want to make the big bucks or hopefully drive down costs overall. So I mean, talking about cost, I think part of, we'll get into, there have been some criticisms of the company and sort of your competitors, this whole new space targeting younger women. And one of them, I think, has to do kind of fundamentally with the fact that it is less expensive. There's almost this sense that maybe it's discount health treatment or something like that. Is that a concern that you can empathize with, or how do you respond to that?
That's been something that is so hard, you know, as a CEO to figure out how to thread the needle there, because I can understand why people might think if your prices are lower, okay, is the quality lower? And that there could be that association or even negative signaling effect to people of having a low price in healthcare. And the fact is that is just not the case for Extend. You know, we're very focused on quality and have excellent reproductive endocrinologists trained at the top institutions in the world, excellent embryologists in this amazing lab we built from scratch. And so we have not skimped at all there. What our insight was really that the margins on fertility treatment for some of these, you know, incumbent institutions were huge. And we were willing and interested to come into the market, take a lower margin, and try to increase access and really democratize access to these fertility treatments. And so it is something that frustrates me that can be associated, a low price can be associated with low quality, because that's not the case here at all.
Well, and I like to joke that if you're designing a solution for women, that you're going to sort of get it from all sides. So on the other hand, the opposite criticism is $6,500 is still a lot of money. Isn't a company like this sort of preying on young women's fears or trying to dupe them out of a large amount of money. And again, that's sort of the opposite side of the same coin. But my understanding is you've got that criticism as well.
Yes. I think for me, you know, seeing friends freeze their eggs and meeting the patients that we care for every day, the opposite could not be more true, that we are not trying to increase the anxiety of anyone. We're trying to alleviate women's anxiety. And really the mechanism to do that is to offer truth-based care. We're very upfront and transparent about what egg freezing is. We never say that it's an insurance policy. We're very forthcoming in the consultation with the doctor at the beginning. You know, he or she goes through the likelihood of a pregnancy or having a baby based on a woman's age at the time and based on her AMH, which we found are the highest correlators with that outcome. And, you know, we let women make the decision based on having all the facts. I think the bigger shame and what would create more anxiety down the road is if none of us talked about the biology of fertility and the fact that egg freezing can help people have children later in actually a more cost-effective and effective way. So I think Extend was founded with the idea that we want to increase awareness. And in fact, you know, for several years, we've been doing egg freezing 101 sessions with women who can come and learn from a doctor about the biology of the fertility, learn about the egg freezing process, pay nothing, and just walk away with that knowledge, think about it, decide what to do with it. Similarly, for a long time, we did not charge for fertility assessments and the consultation with the doctor because we really just wanted to get the word out to women that, hey, age and fertility is a thing that you should be aware of. One of the things that, you know, many people I speak to about egg freezing bring up is that when we were in middle school, sex ed was all about how not to get pregnant and understanding the reproductive system just in that context. And then fast forward 20 years later, you're in your mid-30s, nobody has ever spoken to you about the fact that egg quality and quantity decline with age, and you're realizing it might not be so easy for you to have a baby. And so we don't want people to wake up when it's too late. We want to help them wake up a little bit earlier and take the steps that they feel comfortable with to give them more of a chance to be a mother when they want to be.
That's so funny. I have a friend who's now in her late 30s trying to get pregnant, and she's had the same reaction. She's like, God, I thought it was so easy to get pregnant. That's what I was always, you know, sort of drilled into in middle school. And here I am finding out that, you know, maybe, not that maybe I didn't have to be so careful, but that, you know, things can really change over time.
Well, yeah, I really think that health educators have fallen down on the job by not, you know, making that part of reproduction more clear. And so I think Extend came in and was really the first one shouting from the rooftops about that. And now others have joined us. And I think awareness of that has really grown a lot in the last few years. And I'm really excited and grateful to see that.
Well, and the challenge with education, and I think you guys have experienced this yourselves, is that there tends to be an assumption that with conveying this information comes some sort of judgment or expectation. So I remember my second year of graduate school, or maybe my first year, they had a session that was sort of about work-life balance. But one of the things they covered is how fertility declines. And it was 100% meant to be informative. It was like, you know, you guys should have this information. You can do with it what you will, but you need to be aware of it because grad school takes a long time. You're in sort of your prime reproductive years. You might be going off to a postdoc after that and then maybe on a tenure track. You might not be having kids for 12 years. You should know this ahead of time at least. And I remember thinking like, great, thanks a lot. And leaving the session, all the other women in my group were like, what was that? Are they trying to tell us to have kids now? Like kind of what's with the judgment? And I think it's interesting to me that there's so much confusion about sharing that information with whether it is sort of judgmental or sharing expectations that are implicit in some way.
Yeah, I think it's fundamentally related to the fact that this is a very sensitive and personal issue. And so we've had that same, you know, some criticism for our, you know, social media ads, which we think of as trying to spark conversation and increase awareness around both egg freezing and the biology of fertility. But people can become very offended or sensitive when they think that, oh, you're saying that it's time for me to do this. You're saying that it's time for me to have a baby, that I should be thinking about this. When what we really want people to know is just, you can have the facts if you want them, and we trust you to make an educated decision for yourself. We can't know if you want to have children at all, if you want to have children now, or if you want to have children later. And we don't need to know that. What we want you to understand is we're here for you, you know, to help you figure it out, and then you can make an educated decision on your own.
No, and it's funny you bring up the social media ads because that was something else I was going to raise. So earlier you had an Instagram campaign at Extend Fertility that, like you said, brought up some of these issues and people really responded with lots of passion and enthusiasm, not always positively. But what was interesting is it was unclear whether people were responding because it struck a chord that they were concerned about having children down the road, or because it was too irrelevant for them of, you know, they weren't interested in having children down the road and it was completely irrelevant. So when people dug into it, as far as I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the targeting was very broad. It was like women of a certain age, not women who had been looking to have children. But what was interesting is people were extremely upset about it feeling like almost an invasion of privacy when really, in a way, it was very crude targeting as I understand it.
Yeah, I think overall, I mean, we were not targeting on anything very specific. Exactly. It was quite broad. But again, I think we as a business walk the line between wanting to shake some women and say, you know, wake up. This is something that you should know about. We want to shout from the rooftops. We want you to understand your biology and then you can make a decision. But also to be sensitive that for some people, they may never want to be a mother, and that's obviously okay, and we support that as well. What we just don't want to happen is someone picks their head up out of the sand too late and then wishes they had done something before. And so it is really hard to walk that line, and social media is a bit of a blunt instrument. It's not easy to convey all the nuances of egg freezing and biology through an Instagram ad. And so our intention is really to use those for awareness. And then we offer so many resources for women to come in for free and learn more before deciding what to do that, you know, nobody should walk away with any questions about, you know, what is our true motive or how are we, you know, are we looking to help women get this information? That is what's most important to us. And that's why we offer so many touch points that they can have before deciding to go through with the cycle.
And you call social media a blunt instrument in there. I wonder if part of what, you know, really struck a chord with women here was this disconnect between something like Instagram, which feels so sort of fun and frivolous and youthful and you know, trivial, unimportant, with something like fertility and healthcare. I wonder if there's something just about that and that perceived incompatibility that, you know, also rubbed people the wrong way.
I think that's possible. I think, you know, when I joined here, one of the things that I knew I wanted to do from the beginning was a rebrand. And so we're in the midst of that and really focusing on this idea of truth-based care and helping women fearlessly confront their fertility. And so a lot of these topics can be very scary and can be flashpoints for people. And we want to hold your hand through that. We want to give you all of the information, help you interpret it, and then say, go off and do with it what you will. I think prior to this, our brand was more focused on simply breaking through to get people's attention and increase awareness in general around egg freezing. Now, I think we've gotten to the point where there is a lot more awareness there. And what we really want to do is show people, don't be scared of the truth. We'll help you, you know, figure it out. And then you'll walk away, you know, more educated and potentially less anxious or scared.
I know you've talked about the importance of transparency, but when I looked at the Extend Fertility website, and to be fair, this was about a month ago, so for all I know, it's changed, I was surprised that I didn't see more about, I wouldn't call it the risks, but sort of the likelihood of success. So just to give you a sense of some of the numbers I've heard elsewhere, let's see, according to the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, there's a 2 to 12% chance that a single frozen egg will result in a birth. Another study pointed out that the proportion of frozen eggs which leads to a live birth among women under 36 is 8.2%, while among those aged 36 to 39, this dips to 3.3%. I found those numbers to be very low and very sort of depressingly low, maybe. And I was a little bit surprised, to be honest, that when I went to the website, I didn't see those numbers and sort of those, the numbers that convey the likelihood of success to be more obvious. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So the issue with showing success rates is that every person and individual is different. And so what might be a success rate for a 38-year-old who walks into our office with an AMH of 0.5 would be different from what a 32-year-old who walks into our office with an AMH of 4.0.
And can you say what an AMH is?
Anti-Müllerian hormone is a marker of your ovarian reserve. So basically, the higher that number, the more eggs you still have, which we know over time, quantity declines. And you can see that in the changes in AMH. And also the quality of eggs declines, which is really the only indicator we have for that is age. And so every single person's outcome is likely to be different depending on those variables. We spend a lot of time in our egg freezing 101 session, in the consultation that the doctor does following your fertility assessment, going over the percent likelihood you are to get a baby from your frozen eggs based on those factors. We've also done many blog posts on different topics about declines of fertility with age. And so I think we do have stats like that up there. They may not be, you know, on the first page or two that you're looking at, because there's a lot of nuance to discussing it. But the 2 to 12%, you know, success rate per egg is one that we definitely talk about in both our egg freezing 101 and also in the consultation. But we can narrow in even more on what your likelihood base is based on your age, your health, your anti-Müllerian hormone levels.
Very cool. Yeah. And getting back to, I guess, the other, we've talked about this briefly, but because you're using things like Instagram and you're targeting more of this millennial audience, I think there is this, we talked about already, concern that this audience is maybe being tricked or duped. I'm wondering, getting back to that idea of paternalism, is it paternalistic to think that women can't understand these risks, or that young women can't assess these risks, the risks of waiting versus spending money now versus whether it'll be successful or not, all of those things?
I absolutely think there's paternalism laced into that judgment. Because I do think that when women, you know, get all of the information from us, whether they decide to go forward with egg freezing or not, the sentiment they most often express is how relieved and grateful they are that they now have this, can look at it and can decide. And they really appreciate that we speak to them in a way that views them as an equal and says, here are all of the facts. You know, our doctors and our embryologists have spent many years training and learning about the biology of fertility. Obviously, the layperson hasn't, as you know, I have not. And so they want to basically give that information to them in a way that is digestible and understandable, but also extremely honest. I think that women can and will make the right decision for themselves when they have all of those facts. And so it is definitely paternalistic to say, you know, you should just sit back and not try to tell women about these things, because it will sway them to do one thing over another. Women are, you know, the decision makers on so many things in our society, and they should be the decision makers on what happens with their body.
Well, and before we turn to our final round of questions, do you have an ask for the audience?
My ask for the audience is, if you're a woman or if you're a man, find out more about your fertility. It is really very accessible and available to either come into Extend Fertility or do some fertility testing through your OBGYN or doctor, and just learn more about where you stand so that you can plan best for how you want to, or when you might want to have a family.
And with that, our Think a Little Different round, what's something you've changed your mind about in the last few years?
I think that prior to becoming a mother, I really felt that, I think I did hold the view that why couldn't you do this according to in your prime reproductive years? I only upon having two children do I realize both how amazing it is, but also how life-changing and hard it can be. And so that has led me to realize that it's something to not be taken lightly, to it's worth planning around and really considering if it's right for you.
What's a view that's widely held by your peers that you maybe just aren't totally convinced by?
I'm not totally convinced that the idea of balance, work-life balance, is ever actually achievable. I still think that there are going to be times in my life where I may be working extremely hard and less focused on family. There may be times where I'm focused on my family and less focused on work. but that having it all at the same time is fairly hard to achieve.
Do you have any odd habits or practices that embody your particular worldview?
I'm a big believer in being candid and being honest. So I would say I err on that side more than most people. And that really embodies my view that life is short. We should be able to have honest conversations and help each other through things. And so that's one thing that I would say is a little bit different about me and embodies that worldview.
Is there a common practice that you think will change in the next decade?
One thing I feel strongly will change in the next decade is that home ownership will become less common. I think that millennials in particular are interested in having experiences and less interested in acquiring things. And that previously in the US, you know, acquiring a home was seen as a rite of passage prior to getting married, having a family, and raising that family there. But I think there are many more trends pushing towards people moving around and wanting to have that freedom.
That's interesting. Yeah, I bought my first home last year and I'm still not totally convinced it was a good idea.
I own a home. I still am not convinced it's a good idea either.
No, and I think I always think that's interesting too, to be able to question these very fundamental assumptions of like, oh wait, is that even a good thing?
Definitely.
So on Innovation for All, we focus on this intersection between innovation, so business, technology, and entrepreneurship, and issues around social impact or diversity. Who are two people you think would be interesting for us to have on the podcast?
As I mentioned earlier, we recently did a rebrand of Extend Fertility. We worked with a branding consultant named Kate Hilliard, who I think is extremely brilliant, has worked with all kinds of different brands, and is very attuned to wanting to take on clients who are challenging long-held norms and figuring out how to help those brands convey that message to a wider audience. So I think Kate would be super interesting. The other person that I think would be amazing, who brings together that idea of social innovation and technology, is a business school classmate of mine named Shyla Itacharia. She's currently the chief innovation officer for the town of Gilbert, Arizona, which is one of the largest cities in America, actually, and a huge suburb of Phoenix. And she previously founded a nonprofit that was helping young people get internships in industries where they could learn and then, you know, go on to work in them. And now is chief innovation officer for Gilbert and helping them confront all kinds of unique issues, including a feral cat problem in the area.
It's always funny to try to solve those old problems, feral cat problem, right? With new solutions. It's like, how do
we
deal
with this? What is the innovation that can help do that? I have no idea, but I trust that Shiloh would be the one to figure it out.
Where can people learn more about you or Extend Fertility online?
People interested in learning more about Extend can go to extendfertility.com. They can also follow us on Instagram and learn more about me in both of those places as well.
Anne Hogarty, CEO of Extend Fertility. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Shayna.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If so, I invite you to subscribe to Innovation for All on iTunes or your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you to our producer, Nia Taylor, our audio engineer, Dave Visaya, and Glorianne Oke, who compiles our show notes. You can view show notes from this and every episode at innovationforallcast.com.